You are listening to another Screenfish One-on-One, this time live with director Ron Howard. With his new film Hillbilly Elegy, Howard tells the story of a Yale law student who's drawn back to his Appalachian hometown and reflects on his family's history and his own future. In a special roundtable one-on-one, Screenfisher Daryl Manson speaks to Howard about the appeal of true stories and the challenges of bringing the story to life on screen. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish.
I'm going to go down the list. I have of all your names, and I will announce your name when it is your turn. When it is your turn, if you can just state name and outlet before asking your question, that would be greatly appreciated. So we will go ahead and get started here with Eunice.
Hi, Ron. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm pretty blessed. I get to interview you real quick.
Thank you.
I love your work, and I'm just curious as to your interest in this particular project.
Well, when I read the book, I really related to the characters. I found the book very interesting, but what caught my eye and sort of piqued my curiosity were the family members. And one thing jumped out at me, because my family roots are in Oklahoma, and a small town in Oklahoma, Duncan, and then farm country. My dad was from a farm. And I called my great-grandmother Mamaw, and I thought that was just her nickname. I didn't realize that it was a broadly used cultural, name for grandmothers. So that was one of the things that caught me right away when I read the book. When I started talking to JD about it and learning even more about his family story and frankly, hearing his voice, his accent, his cadences, it just felt very, very familiar to me, even though, my people are from the Midwest and in his Kentucky and then in Ohio. But I've been interested in trying to find a family story that dealt with kind of rural America in a way that I could connect with and relate to. And I began to believe that Hillbilly Elegy was it. And I'm really glad I had the opportunity to make the movie.
Great. And next we have Daryl. Please state name and outlet.
Hi, I'm Daryl Manson with Screenfish. And you've made a lot of films that deal with true stories and then some documentaries as well. Mm-hmm. Is there something in particular about those kind of stories that appeal to you?
I think that maybe as I've gotten a little bit older, that I've found that there's something very powerful in choosing a subject where, you can witness something extraordinary. It happened. And it's not, and you present it to an audience, not as fiction, not as something you wish could happen, but as something that has occurred. And I think that in the relationship between the storyteller and the audience, it's kind of that understanding in some ways allows the filmmaker to be to take even bigger risks with characters when it's based on reality. I discovered it with the first movie that I took on that was based on real events, and that was Apollo 13. And I also found one other thing that when audiences know it's based on a true story, they tune in a slightly different way. It's kind of a different sort of an exchange. It's still meant to be exciting, exhilarating, emotional, dramatic, and entertaining in those ways. But you kind of connect with audiences' hearts and minds in a slightly different way, and that appeals to me. Now, as a kid, I always loved history. the first film I ever made that was a serious film was actually a documentary about the Depression that I made when I was in high school. And so I've always been fascinated by true stories. I was just afraid to delve into them. And it took all the way to 1995 and Apollo 13 for me to do that. And lastly, you ask about documentaries. That's something I've only had the nerve to try in like the last 6 years or so. And I really, really enjoy it. I never want to give up doing scripted films or television shows because I love working with actors and creating moments. But there's something about capturing events recounting them. It's a different kind of creative exercise and a slightly different kind of storytelling, but more alike than I would have than I guessed it would be. I'm able to use more of my experience on a documentary than I ever thought that I actually could. And so that's I'm just, you know, kind of, I feel very, very grateful that I through Imagine Entertainment and various relationships that I have this opportunity to work in these different mediums.
Great. Next we have John.
Hi, Ron. John Booker, LA screenwriter.
Hi.
I was very struck by this story as it seems to be a tale of American mythology. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if you might could speak to what we can see about ourselves in these characters and in this story, regardless of where we come from.
Well, I mean, of course, that's a very personal thing. And every audience is going to view a film like this, I think, which deals with a number of different relationships and aspects of JD's life and his family's experience. So, and I think the themes that are going to resonate with various individuals, there are multiple themes, I guess, and story values, right? So people are going to kind of take from it what they will and evaluate it through their lens. And that's fair enough. That's what I would have expected. Pardon me. Let me turn this off. Sorry. There we go. That was my bad. To me, when I read the book, I didn't believe that there was a movie in sort of the big socio-political overview, which is interesting. I enjoyed reading what JD had to say, what he thought. But it was the family that intrigued me. And what I felt I could relate to, of course, was some of the cultural specificity and understanding the specific reasons behind the economic hardship that family faced and some of the cycles of dysfunction and abuse and addiction and whatnot, which was very powerful. But I really hoped that people understood that I was looking not broadly at an entire generation or, you know, society. This is J.D. Vance's family story. And to the extent that it does reverberate in people's lives, I think it goes far beyond Appalachia or the Rust Belt. I think what's interesting about it is, in addition to that cultural specificity, you do have this sort of a universal shared sets of experiences. And so I was enthusiastic about the possibility of just, you know, offering new perspectives on this kind of shared humanity. And I hope it does resonate with people, from all corners of the country and the planet.
Next, we have Tyler.
Hi, Ron. I'm Tyler. I'm with Relevant Magazine. Okay. You mentioned finding those shared connections. When you're making a movie like this that is about a side of the country that many Americans never get to see, what are some of the misconceptions that you think, or at least hope, can sort of be addressed in telling a story like this that you hope might forge some of those connections? Or what are some of the beliefs that you hope that this could directly confront for people who didn't grow up like this?
Well, of course, I was trying to avoid dumb tropes, you know. For example, when I was a kid on the Andy Griffith Show, Andy, used to get very upset about the Beverly Hillbillies because he'd say that that's farce and that's okay, but we're not the Beverly Hillbillies. He didn't mind that the Beverly Hillbillies was successful or anything. It didn't bother him at all. But when the writing would sort of push things in a farcical direction, he would say, look, where I come from, those people, they're plenty funny on their own. We don't have to reach that far for it. So, you know, Barney could still have one bullet. That was okay. It was grounded in something that he could, that he believed was still kind of authentic. Ernest T. Bass could come to town and throw rocks through the window. He believed that was okay, but he didn't like these other things. A lot of it is just a sort of personal lens, right? It's a kind of a personal filter. But I always appreciated that for him, there was a real dividing line. So all these years later, I certainly was trying to avoid tropes. I talked to, interviewed people, some country Western singer songwriters, and just sort of, documentarians who had focused a lot on the region. So I kind of wanted to understand what the tropes were and how that could be avoided. But ultimately, I kept going back to the research that JD was handing me, his movies, his home movies, him taking me to Jackson, Kentucky, and showing me the holler and showing me where he hung out and the house that he spent time in, and picking up a turtle and that he found. He was so delighted because he just loved when he was a kid finding turtles on the road and Middletown, Ohio. So again, I decided to relieve myself of the responsibility of trying to offer some sort of broad overview. And I just sort of said, well, what was JD's holler? What was JD's Jackson, Kentucky? What was JD's Middletown, Ohio, his Rust Belt experience? And to the extent that it resonates with other people's experiences, great. And I know it's authentic because it is, because we, but it's not going to be everybody's experience from Appalachia or the Rust Belt. So I recognize that as well.
Next we have Mark.
Hi, Ron. Mark Patterson from Catholic News Service. I was going to ask you where you felt that the Hillbilly Elegy fits in the thread of everything that you've done before here.
It is my first family story that is based on real events. Other movies that I've done that Cinderella Man was arguably a family story as well. I care about characters. I care about dimensional characters. I'm not that interested in bad guys. I'm really interested in the way people work together to try to achieve something. When you talk to JD, he does not think of this as a pull yourself up by your bootstrap story at all. He thinks of it, more as a rescue story. He feels that he simply would not have been able to achieve any of these ambitions, any of these goals, without the important women in his life, especially Mama and his sister, Lindsay. And then later Usha, and even his mother, Bev, despite all of her difficulties, was able to be there for him in a couple of times and just sort of allow the right thing to happen. So I think that really interested me, that this was a story about people who could have difficult lives packed with regrets, some of which they own, some of which they feel the victims of, circumstances. But at a particular moment, they may have the opportunity to make a huge difference in the life of somebody who they care about, and perhaps, you know, and change the course of a family. And those are the kinds of outcomes that I tend to try to look for. So maybe there's a sort of a pattern in that, people coming together and actually together achieving something.
Great. And next we have Jacob.
Hey, Mr. Howard, this is Jacob from Dove. I'm curious, the last movie I watched that you all had an impact on was the one you made with your daughter about dads. Oh. And there's a dad's size hole in JD's story, but the women step up to be mom and dad. Mm-hmm. Curious about what you see, because you were making those kind of in parallel.
I certainly JD himself, leaned very heavily on his papa, and in his mind, his grandfather, papa, was a great guy. After he passed, he began to recognize that that papa had made some mistakes and some regrettable decisions along the way. And it wasn't until he was older that he began to realize that it was, in fact, the women in his life who had made the difference. When I asked him, when we were beginning to adapt the book, I said, what were the two most dangerous periods, you know, in your life? I have to narrow this story down. Where were you, you know, in the most distress? And he, you know, he cited these two times, his, when he was 13 and 14, and then again, when he was at Yale. I was surprised by the Yale answer. I thought it might have had something to do with the Marine Corps, which was so important to him. And he said, well, the Marine Corps was important, but it was primarily, you know, almost 100% positive. Once you got out of boot camp, it was really a great growth experience for me and an opportunity I'm grateful for. But it was Yale where it almost all came tumbling down. And I thought that was very surprising, but it was at Yale that he began to realize that there was so much he could lose. When he was a boy, he knew he felt bad. He knew he wasn't happy. He knew something was wrong, but he couldn't much see the future. He couldn't see the forest for the trees. And so in a way at that time, he didn't even recognize that he'd been rescued by his very heroic grandmother. Later, he fully understood that. And I think in a lot of ways, that's why he wanted to write the book. And it was the thing that he was the most protective of when it came to adapting it, was not preventing us from showing her warts and all. In fact, we couldn't get close to getting all of Mama's warts. And we had to dial her back a little bit, or else no one would ever believe this woman. But she was wild. She was profane. She was devout. I mean, she was a paradox and a fascinating one. And Glenn really brought her to life in a powerful way, I thought.
Great. We have just a bit more time left. So Eunice, you may ask another question. Okay, we'll pass that over to Daryl.
What you've been talking about trying to adapt it, what were the hardest parts of trying to adapt this book that had so many different levels to it?
I think that was, you just said it. It was, there were so many different levels. And this is one of these things where it's very trying to decide what you want to leave out. By the same token, what I liked about it is it's not unlike the other movies based on real events that I've done that were tremendously eventful, whether it's about race car drivers or Nobel Prize winning schizophrenic geniuses, you know, or going to the moon. this was about these turning points in our lives that to anybody else on the outside, you might not even notice it's happening, but within your family, it's historic, it's seismic. And it was trying to find those twists and those turns and those turning points in JD's life that were really the ones that we needed to dramatize. So we wound up looking at these two crisis points, and it's tricky because it's nonstop struggle. You know, you don't get a lot of comfortable time to, you know, in the movie, sort of recognizing the times of peace and harmony, of which there were some. But this is about these two periods where he was most in jeopardy emotionally and to some extent physically, and where his future was most in doubt. And so it was really filtering through his life, not just the book, but also all of these interviews, and identifying something that we could present in the framework of an entertaining, engrossing, suspenseful, emotional movie narrative, so that people could sit and watch it and lose themselves in it in the way you hope they will.
Great. Thank you all so much. That is all the time we have. Journalists, pleasure. You may exit the Zoom meeting. Thank you.
Thanks all. Bye-bye.